welcome back to A Place for Film, the official IU Cinema podcast. I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Rowe, and as always, with me is my co-host, David Carter.
Hey, what's up, homie? How you holding up?
Not much is up. I did some yoga today, and I finished watching Bringing Up Baby.
Ooh,
which
delightful.
Had me in stitches. It was so funny.
Well, because you are indulging in the Criterion Channel Cary Grant comedies, right?
Yeah, I didn't know it existed until a few days ago, and it leaves in a couple days.
Ain't that the way, man? Like, so, I mean, I'm happy we're actually talking about the Criterion Channel, even though this is a pro physical media podcast. Mm-hmm. The offerings at Criterion Channel are quite good. Mm-hmm. And they announced their March slate, and there's like so much good stuff coming there. But like the things that like I'm specifically very excited about are the Westerns starring Black people, like Black Westerns.
Ooh.
Which is like, I'm a cinephile, but I have huge blank spots. Obviously, no things exist, but only in the abstract in some cases. After I saw Django Unchained back in 2012, I was like, man, I'd really like to watch more Westerns with Black people in them, which is why, despite the movie like just kind of being okay, mm-hmm. I like that Magnificent Seven remake with Denzel.
Denzel makes everything better.
Yeah, but then also just like, much like in Django Unchained or, you know, whatever, it's just like, it makes 100% sense to like the story of a Western, the end of something, and like the rise of like industrialization and like labor and all stuff. Yeah, Black people should be involved with that. That's like the story of America. Mm-hmm. It's the story of America. So they have this whole slew of Black Westerns coming to Criterion Channel in March. I'm so stoked about it. And they also have all the Preston Sturges movies coming to Criterion Channel. Preston Sturges, one of my favorite directors, one of my favorite writers.
Man, you're gonna have a busy month.
I'm a busy month also because on Mubi, I need to check out, because I don't know what Mubi's like go come and go schedule anymore, since they're no longer just like 30 days, 30
okay,
movies.
They've changed it.
They've changed it, yeah. So, but they have all the Lena Wertmüller movies on there, and yeah. I need to get to those. This is a long way of saying I got a big back catalog of movies I need to get to, both digital and physical at this point.
That'd be fun, though.
Yeah. What's your next Cary Grant film?
I've started Indiscreet, but I couldn't finish before we did this. So I'll finish Indiscreet. And then hopefully squeeze in Holiday also.
Ooh, yes. The IU Cinema screened Holiday many years ago, and I had a hoot and a half watching that one.
Yes, I'm so excited.
He comes in hot in that one, if my memory serves me correctly.
He comes in hot in everyone.
No, I mean, he is inherently hot, and he walks into frame, but I just mean, like, he comes in strong in Holiday, if my memory serves me correctly. Sometimes you get the subtle Cary Grant. We watch Notorious. He's subtly unveiled in that movie.
I'm excited.
But if you are listening to this, go check out. Look, at this point, I'm just going to start plugging it. You should have, if you listen to this podcast and you have any sort of money to spare monthly, or wink, wink, nudge, nudge, just share an account, you should definitely check out Criterion Channel and Mubi, especially after our conversation about, you know, Martin Scorsese and old film discourse and curation and all that. I have, with the exception of Criterion Channel, which they obviously are making strides to improve in their like lack of like, you know, diversified curation, like they're both great and I don't think you can go wrong. I would say just relinquish the anxiety of trying to search for something to watch and just let something pour over you if it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And just go with it.
I always look at what's leaving soon so that I know I can get, like, if I find something I want to watch, I can get that in before it leaves. That's how I choose what to watch. What's leaving?
I mean, it's a good method. You got to get it in while you can. But we are not here to talk about the good of the streaming services in the digital age.
We only talk about the bad.
We're only ever negative and apocalyptic when we talk about the future of cinema. No, movies are great and they're wonderful. I just think more people should watch them. This is an episode where we're going to have a very special guest, Mary Figueroa, who is one of the student projectionists at the IU Cinema. We've long wanted to have her on the podcast, and while we are having her on, it is in a kind of bittersweet fashion because we are friends with Mary, and we'd love to just have her in that studio,
yeah.
Talk to her in person, but this will have to do, because she's departing IU this year. She's finally graduating.
Finally.
Look, when you're in, whenever people go back for their masters, I'm always just like, and they graduate, I'm like, ugh, finally. Be free.
For real.
And she's going to be talking about her staff selects pick, Woman House, later in the episode. But before we get to that, Elizabeth is going to bring us the schedule for this week's screenings at the IU Cinema.
Coming up this week at IU Cinema, first, Tuesday, March 2nd at 7 p.m., we will be screening the historic documentary from 1974, Woman House. Directed by Johanna Dimitrikas, Woman House centers on the art installation and performance space of the same name, organized by CalArts Feminist Art Program co-founders Judy Chicago and Miriam Shapiro. This is a part of our Staff Select series and was curated by IU Cinema's graduate assistant projectionist Mary Figueroa, who will be joining us later in the episode to talk about the event. Also coming up this week, starting on Wednesday, March 3rd and continuing until the 17th, we have Bill Gunn's 1973 experimental horror film, Ganja and Hess. When anthropologist Hess Green is stabbed by his unstable assistant with an ancient ceremonial dagger, he is blessed with immortality, but also cursed with a thirst for blood. After developing an unexpected partnership with his assistant's wife, Ganja, they explore just how much power blood holds. This is a part of our 10 Years, 10 Films, 10 Perspectives series, celebrating the 10th anniversary of the IU Cinema. To access this film for free, you must be signed up to receive the IU Cinema's weekly emails, which you can do by visiting the cinema's website and going to the contact page.
My name is Mary Figueroa. I am a graduate student at IU. I study library science and also history. I'm primarily interested in women's history in the 19th century in the United States. And I'm really interested within that in domestic history. So, you know, the home comes into that obviously as like a structure, as an idea. So that's really been my focus more recently. And then I also work at IU Cinema as a projectionist, which has been remote as of recent, alas. And then I also work at the Wiley House Museum as a museum assistant and have for the past 5 years.
Oh my gosh, 5 years.
Yeah, I clearly am like obsessed with it.
And this is your final semester, right?
Yeah, I have technically the summer semester, but yeah, it's my final semester. I have an internship that I'm doing over the summer and then I'll be totally done.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. End of an era.
Yes. It's been a long era because I pretty much like did undergrad here at IU and then I was like, oh, I'll just keep going. So,
Mary, we're having you on today because you have, is this your first staff selects that you've ever gotten?
It is. Yeah.
Well, this is Mary's first Staff Selects. And for those who don't know, Staff Selects is a program at the IU Cinema in which all of our names are tossed into a hat, essentially. And whichever names get picked that semester get to attempt to play whatever movie they want at the IU Cinema. I say attempt because I'm pretty sure there have been some movies that probably get vetoed or just aren't available.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually the case with my staff select, because we're doing the virtual setting, you know, we had like a pretty limited amount of movies we could choose from.
Yeah.
And I mean, I also think that, you know, you have to cater to the platform. So when I was like picking this movie, I was thinking, okay, it's not going to be in the cinema. If it was going to be in the cinema, you know, maybe I would have picked something else.
That's really smart.
I know I would have picked something else, but you know, I'm still really, really excited about this movie because I think it works for this platform. And that's why I wanted to screen it. So we're talking about Woman House, which is a documentary that was made at the same time as the Woman House exhibit was opening in California, in LA. So it was this exhibit that opened in this LA mansion, and this feminist art program at the California Institute of the Arts, they worked for a little under a year on constructing all of the installations that went into this house. And they're all pretty much centered around ideas of womanhood, domesticity, motherhood, pregnancy, menstruation, you know, just these kinds of ideas. And then there was also a bunch of performance art pieces that went along with the house. So yeah, so that's what a lot of the documentary is looking at the performance art pieces. And then also they would have these like circle sessions, which they called conscious raising sessions, where they would talk about just like different experiences they had with their gender, and then try to use those experiences to then create these art pieces. So that's like a pretty quick summary of it all, I think.
How did you discover this film? Like, what's your relationship with this movie?
Well, I discovered this film because I, like I said, I was really trying to think about something that could have a conversation behind it, because what I've been really liking about the virtual screenings is that the best ones I've seen that IU Cinema has done have like really great Q&A panels afterwards. And, you know, I think that's something that we're all really missing right now, is to like connection, conversations about these important issues. Like, we're all a little disconnected right now. So I knew I wanted to try to have some sort of conversation afterwards, which it was really awesome. Brittany, who's the interim director, kind of let me adapt my staff select, which usually doesn't have a Q&A tacked onto it. But I was like, I really want to do this Q&A portion. And I am always wanting to talk about women in houses, and no one ever wants to talk about women in houses with me. So I was like, this is a great chance to force people to talk about the things I want to talk about.
Were you aware of Woman House the exhibit before you were aware of Woman House the documentary about the, well, I guess more of a, is it, would it classify as an installation or an exhibit?
I think that I would say it's an exhibition that's made up of installations and performance art pieces is the best way I think to describe it, maybe. But I actually, you know, I was like only a little bit aware of it. Like, I knew of Judy Chicago and I knew of some of her bigger art pieces, and I knew Woman House was one of them, but I had never really looked into it too much. And just like trying to find a documentary that could allow me to talk about the things that I wanted to talk about, I, you know, came across this documentary and watched it and was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. I want to show this.
How much convincing did it take for Brittany to give you this Q&A? Because you, like you said, you're the first one, the only one to have a Q&A on their staff select. So you're leaving quite a legacy.
It really didn't take too much convincing, I don't think. I sent like a single email that was like, I really want to talk to this person and this person and this person. And I think part of it is like coming from like a museum background a little bit. Like, I already have a little bit of experience doing some programming and like putting on exhibits of my own. And so I have some like IU connections to like reach out and talk to those kinds of people. So I think that was the ticket to convince Brittany. I don't know, maybe not.
I mean, you have opened the floodgates, because like, I'm obnoxious, and like, if I ever get a staff select, I'm gonna be like, but Mary got a Q&A after hers.
Oh my gosh. I will say, I don't know that I will ever ask for a Q&A, because I know I'll have to put it together and participate in it.
I don't know. I don't want so much a Q&A as much as I want to like invite someone on stage just to have like a conversation about the movie with me. Like, Elizabeth, we very clearly, if we got a dual, like a joint staff selects, would pick a Mission Impossible movie. And I just sit on stage and talk to you about Mission Impossible.
Imagine watching one of those in the cinema. We digress. We digress.
We digress. Yes.
Mary, for those listening who may not know, because it's funny, because when I used to cater, that's how I began to know what the Wiley House was. Can you tell us what the Wiley House is?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Me and Elizabeth, we have worked together at the cinema, but we've also worked together at the Wiley House. But the Wiley House is, it's, to put it like briefly, it's an 1835 historic house that's connected to IU. And the reason it's connected to IU is because it was the first president's home. But over the past, especially like last decade or so, there's been a lot of creative interpretation with the Wiley House. So we're trying to move away from, you know, just talking about like IU history within the house to talking about mm-hmm. the other people that also occupied the house, or maybe didn't even occupy the house, but, you know, were connected to it in some way.
Yeah, that's great. I know at Christmas, is that when you guys do the like tours and like caroling?
Yeah, so we didn't have it this past year, obviously, but mm-hmm. We usually have a Christmas by candlelight tour, and yeah, we'll have like singers and carolers, I guess, and singers, and like we have someone like playing the piano in the parlor, and the whole house is lit up by candlelight, which is really fun, because I mean, that's one thing that I think, you know, you miss out on when you go to historic houses a little bit, is there's some vibes that are missing that would have been there if you were mm-hmm. actually in the house at the time that it was built. And yeah, if it was nighttime, like you're not really going to be able to see right in front of you like super well. So it's kind of fun always, I think, to go to historic house museums and have that experience, I guess.
Do you think that's why you had like, that's why Woman House is like so much on your mind, is your work with Wiley House over the past 5 years?
Oh, 100%. I think that, when I was 10 years old, I started working at Connor Prairie Living History Museum.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I've always been connected to these like historic houses, you know?
Wait, when you were 10?
Yeah. I mean, I volunteered.
How do they go about hiring 10-year-olds?
Yeah. What does a 10-year-old volunteer do?
I'm going to sound really dorky, but you dress up in period attire and you pretend to be a 10-year-old living in 1836 Indiana. So I would like garden and cook, and I pretty much like lived the life of like a young woman, like living in Indiana at that time every weekend until I was like 17. And then I came to college, and then I started working at the Wiley House and haven't stopped working there. So more than half of my life, I've been like working at historic houses and thinking about womanhood and how that's connected to, like, you know, I think it's a great way to tell, especially 19th century women's history, is to talk about domestic life and not just about domestic life, but the times when women, you know, kind of contradicted these like domestic ideals that were set up for them mm-hmm. in the 19th century that were really damaging in a lot of ways to their lives.
Could you tell us, so the Q&A for your event has participants in the call and response creative interpretations of the Wiley House. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that was an exhibit that happened right before COVID hit. Mm-hmm. Like the opening happened probably like a week before like everything shut down, I think. So it was like the last big event that I went to. I remember like the mayor being there and like doing the elbow thing and stuff, you know, but yeah, there was a lot of work that went into it. And it was a bunch of local artists, not just Bloomington, but Indiana more generally. And all of these artists, were invited to create art installations, art pieces that highlight the marginalized histories of the house. So they're all contemporary art pieces in this historic house, you know, that was initially started as a museum to honor this like great white man, you know? And so the whole idea is to move away from that and to like have the like shock factor of seeing these contemporary art pieces within a historic setting that makes you think about, okay, well, who isn't being talked about, you know, at a lot of these historic houses?
That's honestly so cool and so important. And I'm incredibly annoyed at the timing.
I know, right? It's such a bummer. So that was another part of the reason that I was like really trying to find something that could connect to all of this, because I mean, all of these artists like worked so hard on these pieces, and I think they're really beautiful and really special, and they're doing something really important, because I think historic houses, like, they're places that, you know, we have like a really cool opportunity to talk about histories that are underrepresented. And oftentimes, like, that's just not happening. But it's cool that like on our campus, you know, that is happening and there is like this creative interpretation going on.
Do you have plans in the future to continue your work at historic houses?
I mean, I would love to continue working at historic houses. I think, like I said, they're so special. And, you know, a lot of times, like, in the past couple of years, like, we keep hearing about, like, monuments, right, all the time, and the issues behind monuments. And I don't know, I keep thinking, you know, like, why aren't we talking more about, like, the issues behind historic houses? And because I think that it's just, like, we are separating like the public persona, which is like the monument, from then like the personal person, and like that's their house and we're commemorating their like personal life. And I think, I don't know why we like still think that we shouldn't be like critiquing the like personal life, like the interior, like their private space, which isn't really private, you know, of course, especially when it becomes a museum. And yeah, I just think that there's so much opportunity, especially because you get so many school groups that come in, like little kids that are still, you know, having their brains molded. And like that kind of stuff is exciting and fun. I think especially, you know, like I remember, like maybe I'm just a nerd, but I remember going to stuff like this. I think like being at a place where, you know, like history happened, like there's something like site specific, place specific that kind of touches you.
So Mary, what would you tell the people listening to this who you want to come to the screening about Woman House to like just get them so jazzed up to watch this 45-minute documentary? Because I quite enjoyed it, but I want as many eyes at that virtual screening as possible.
I would tell them that I think that there's some really shocking, provocative, at sometimes, like, to be honest, like very disturbing, upsetting art pieces. But I think that, I mean, like, there were moments when I watched it where I was like, this is the opposite now. Now, this is not encouraging people to go, but like, there were moments where I felt like deeply uncomfortable watching this. But then there are also, I don't know, I think there's like a lot of important takeaways. And it's interesting to see like a moment captured in like a larger movement. And, you know, like, looking at it from 2021, there's like some glaringly obvious things that are like, well, this is not okay from like the current mindset of like social activism. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it definitely captures a moment, you know, in the 1970s, like early feminist movement. And I think it does like a really good job of showing, you know, where that was a really progressive movement, but also, you know, like the shortcomings of it as well. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I love some of these art pieces. I think that they're like really cool. Like there's one where there's like the kitchen, that's the first art piece you see, but yeah, the kitchen is all pink. Like literally everything in the kitchen is pink. And then there's all these eggs just stuck on the wall, like slowly turning into breasts, which I think is like just really cool, obviously. And it's called the Nurturance Kitchen or something like that. Maybe I'm messing that up a bit. But, you know, I think it's like you get it, obviously, you know, and it's there's just like a ton of really cool pieces like that are featured.
Who are the people participating in the Q&A?
Okay, so we have three of the artists from the exhibit who all did really cool pieces. Joanna, she did some great pieces on Elizabeth Breckenridge, who worked at the Wiley House from the age of 13 until she was 67, which is insane.
Incredible.
Yeah. And she is a Black woman who eventually became a property owner in Bloomington, you know, after working so many years. And so it's like her pieces are definitely, I mean, they show like, you know, how Lizzie was there, but also, you know, a lot of times like just kind of erased from the history of the house, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I really like a lot of her pieces and they're all throughout the house too. Like, I think she has a piece in every single room. And then Carissa, she is a textile artist primarily. And she's worked with the Wiley House before because we have like lots of quilt stuff. And I think that's a big part of the movie too, you know, is like taking decorative arts and craft sort of arts and using that like in a more high art setting, saying like, you know, women's art can also be high art, duh. But she is in this really small bedroom, her pieces, and it's like this quilt tent kind of thing. And it's meant to talk about the children of the Wiley house and how, you know, a lot of times we just kind of pass over children's history. So that's kind of unique. And there's actually a room in Woman House too that kind of focuses on like the gendered experience of girlhood. And it's actually one of the coolest rooms, I think. We'll get to talk about that, which is really fun. And then Sarah, her piece is this really great like visual, audiovisual piece that she worked on about Maggie Wiley Millett, who's one of the women of the house who I actually, I focus a lot of my own research on. So, you know, like seeing that was really cool. And, you know, I love audiovisual stuff. I'm a projectionist at the cinema. So that was fun that I was like, ah, this is amazing. And then Carrie Champion will also be there. And she is like, the superstar behind it all. She coordinated it and planned everything, and she's the curator of the exhibit. So yeah, I think we have like a pretty good squad going into it.
I mean, that sounds awesome. That sounds great. I can't wait for it. Mary, is there anything you'd like to plug? You could plug more Wiley House. If there's anything else with Wiley House coming up, if you want to plug yourself, you can plug your social media.
Cool. I will plug something actually, because the Wiley House, and I've been lucky enough to be working on this. That's why I was actually originally at the Wiley House when we started recording, was because we are working on a seed giveaway. So for the next month, all through March, all through Women's History Month, I should probably mention that at some point during all this too, because that's a part of this. But we're having a seed giveaway at the Wiley House every Friday from noon to 5 p.m. And you can come in and like, there's no cost, nothing like that. You just get to pick 5 seeds. It's very simple. 5 seed packets. And yeah.
Well, if you don't have anything else to plug, we'll say goodbye to you. But here's the thing. The way the IU Cinema podcast works is that once you're on once, you can just be on whenever you want, no matter if you work for the IU Cinema or not anymore. So we will have you on again in the future, Mary.
Okay, cool. Because we've got to, at some point, you know, we got to talk like horror movies. We got to talk.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, look, you can put out the call, but we will bug you now. Like, we will have you back on.
So, okay, cool.
Thank you so much, Mary. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We hope that you got some great context from that conversation. As we probably mentioned, please tune into the screening this Tuesday, where Mary will go deeper into the film than we went on this episode. We just wanted to whet people's appetites so that they would come and watch this. I don't know, in my estimation, a very interesting film. I had a great time watching it.
Same. I'm very excited for the Q&A on Tuesday.
Elizabeth, where can people find you to follow you online?
Find me on Instagram. Find me on Letterboxd. Find me on Twitter. All at my name, Elizabeth Rao.
You can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Dolphy. And you can find me on Twitter at Samurai Flicks. I did post another Blu-ray review very recently, so go check that out and listen to that. Some good gems in February from old Kino Lorber that I'm very happy with. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for us this week. This has been A Place for Film. We'll see you at the movies. Good night.
Good night.